Welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I'm Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening, David.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Let's forget the fact that I was like unloading all my life's problems on you a second ago.
Yeah.
And pretend I'm doing great.
There you go.
I also I always feel like really stupid whenever I complain about my life to you because you've been in a hospital bed for over a year.
Yeah.
And
but that's the thing is, you know, while I do understand that my situation is probably objectively worse than most people's, you don't know what this is like. And so the problems that you have are they're still very serious, you know, it's not like this is the only problem that's worth anything. Like, I had a friend whose mother passed away recently, and, you know, he's like, he goes, oh, I feel like I shouldn't be talking about this. It's like, you just lost someone, man.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and so, like, there's other problems besides this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm perfectly fine with people telling me, like, what's going on in their lives. At the very least, it gives me a bit of a distraction.
Yeah. And you could be like, glad I'm not that guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I just get to sit around and watch movies all day. And then, you know, in that brief moment of silence between movies, there's just the sound of hellish screaming going on in my head. But then I turn on the next movie and it's fine.
That's what movies are good for.
Exactly.
Now, I know... I had something I wanted to talk about here, as I recall, here at your facility, you have a ton of streaming services, but I don't think you have the Criterion Channel here.
I don't.
Okay. And this is coincidentally on, I can't remember if it was the most recent or the most upcoming, or the upcoming Patreon, Scott and I talked about this, but there's been more since. So, you know, the Criterion Channel will have little, themes, month we're having. So what they're doing right now, I think leading up to Halloween, they are highlighting 90s horror movies.
Okay.
And I've seen... from multiple people on the internet, including people whose opinions I generally value, some pushback against the idea that a movie like I Know What You Did Last Summer is going to be on the Criterion Channel. And to me, I think by contextualizing it the way that they have, I don't think that Criterion putting a movie on their channel is Criterion saying this movie is good.
Right.
They are saying this is this 90s horror thing is something that is notable and worthwhile.
Right.
And this is a prime example of it.
Yeah.
So I think academically I am 100% okay with a movie like I Know What You Did Last Summer, which I saw at the time and don't really remember feeling.
It's fine.
Yeah, I remember hating it. I don't remember liking it.
It's Scream's little brother, and so it's a little bit annoying and all that, but that's the thing. It's like, I think Kevin Williamson was involved in some way, and that's the thing. It's like, outside of Scream, after Scream, he made such a difference in 90s horror and sci-fi that I feel like to only focus on Scream, I think is a mistake. You know, it's like, hey, we're doing something about 80s horror, but we're only going to feature the first Friday the 13th, you know, the one where Jason isn't the killer. I would definitely not read it that way. Like, if they were going to do like a series on like disaster movies, you know, and then they showed Armageddon, which admittedly was in the Criterion collection for a time.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, if they, let's say it wasn't, I would totally expect them to show Armageddon or The Towering Inferno or any other, or maybe even, you know, 2012, the Roland Emmerich movie. Like, I would expect that because it's not like they're saying this is a great movie so much as this was a movie that is a good example of this subgenre and one that a lot of people probably associate with the subgenre.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't... This kind of sounds like gatekeeping a little bit.
a couple things. One, I think it's, I know What You Did Last Summer who's, I know Buffy, sorry, Sarah Michelle Gellar is in it, right? I don't remember who else is Ryan Phillippe in it? Or am I just like making that connection because of Cruel Intentions?
Wait, which one? Which one was Jennifer Love Hewitt?
Jennifer Love Hewitt is, okay, I Know What You Did Last Summer is Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Anne Heche, Ryan okay. Phillippe, Freddie right. Prinze Jr.
Oh, that's right.
So you got that SMG and FPJ who are have been married for years now.
Yeah.
Apparently Johnny Galecki's in this. So yeah, it's interesting. At the time, I probably would have been like into watching it for Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah.
And I think at that time I didn't like Ryan Phillippe.
Right.
I think it kind of took like Gosford Park and The Way of the Gun, I think, which were back-to-back years, although I just set them in reverse order. It was Way of the Gun, then Gosford Park for me to
I think 54 is the thing that got me thinking of them in a slightly different way.
Okay.
But in retrospect, he was a perfectly fine actor in I Know What You Did Last Summer and Cruel Intentions. Like, I think he was talented at the time and then just got better.
Yeah.
But I think because there was kind of a pretty boy quality,
I think I
was inclined to dismiss him.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. And then I was also going to say, you mentioned Friday the 13th. Do you know I have never seen Friday the 13th?
All right.
But there is an upcoming Friday the 13th in October in just a couple of weeks.
Yes.
So I'm going to remedy that. I'm going to watch it on Friday the 13th.
Okay.
That's a plan. So yeah, but back to the thing, I mean, you mentioned gatekeeping, but I also think there's, and this
that,
is what,
that might not be the right word for it.
But I think this is something, this is what, you're Tyler, what Scott and I talked about on the Patreon that might have already posted or not. I can't keep these things straight. Which is that like a bad movie becomes more valuable the older it gets because it becomes an historical document.
Sure. Absolutely.
What got us talking about this actually, so this is a patreon.com/battleshipretention, but this is a sneak peek at a conversation Scott and I had. So here's the, I was talking to Natalie about MASH because I love the TV show MASH and she hates it.
Oh, she hates
well,
it.
Well, I think she's never given it a chance. I think she, like, as a kid, she'd be watching like fun comedy reruns and then MASH would come on and she'd be like boring and turn it off. And I think she still has that association.
Yeah.
Whereas I love MASH. So we were talking about MASH. Here's the train. I was talking about MASH. I was talking about the theme song, which in the TV show doesn't have any lyrics, but it's called Suicide is Painless.
Yeah.
And then I was talking about the fact that Marilyn Manson did a cover of Suicide is Painless for the soundtrack to Blair Witch 2 Book of Shadows, which I never saw because everyone said it was terrible.
Yeah.
But now I was thinking, like, I'll bet it's fascinating. Even though it's bad, I'll bet with this much time, I'll bet Book of Shadows is an interesting document of like a studio that like just absolutely rushed this movie that had nothing to do with the original or its creators, right? I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. It probably is such a time capsule.
Well, and I do think that like, I think especially with genre movies, because genre tend to reflect, you know, they reflect like the culture of the time, but also like you said, there is this tendency within that genre especially to just rush into the next thing. Like, there were like 8 Friday the 13th movies in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not because they were taking their time with them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just seeing something as like, you know, like, gosh, where was it? I think it was at the Egyptian a few years ago that they were showing Halloween and Halloween 2, which takes place the same night.
Right.
And I'd seen Halloween 2 already, and I knew that it wasn't nearly as good as the first Halloween, but I liked watching one right after another because it's supposed to be the same night, and you just see how much, and like if you watch them right in a row, it does just feel like a continuation, but so different. So just like watching this stuff like academically is like, let's see how they do this, even though you know that they're not going to do it very well.
Yeah.
Like, you just kind of still want to watch it again as sort of a time capsule, and sort of it can capture like the studio mentality of the time or the audience mentality of the time.
Okay, before we move on, I will say I just looked it up, and the movie that I was calling Blair Witch 2 Book of Shadows is technically called Book of Shadows Blair Witch 2.
There we go, yeah.
And it is on Paramount Plus. You can stream it right now on Paramount Plus.
I'm gonna. Let's stop recording.
But before that, real quick, I'm going to tell you about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors that look great. They sound great. I use them each and every day of my life. Tyler hopes to go back to using them each and every day sometime soon.
I haven't been using them, but in the spirit of like talking about music, I've been listening to a lot of Portishead lately.
Oh, yeah?
Which I've always liked. The reason I bring it up is because it was playing when like a nurse came in and they were, I think, putting me in my wheelchair. And so it was playing and one of the CNAs said, like, this music kind of scares me. And I was like, that's right. That's as it should be.
I remember a couple things about Portishead. I remember a couple of years ago when we did the Needle Drops episode with Sean for 2020 or 2021. Mm-hmm. One of my picks was a Portishead song off of their third album, mm-hmm. which I reflexively thought of as the new stuff.
Oh, of course.
And then realized, because there was a big break between their second and third album.
Yeah.
But then I realized more time has passed since the third album came out than it had passed between the second and third
absolutely.
Albums. And I was like, oh man. Another thing, there used to be a wine and beer tasting room in Solvang, where Natalie and I mm-hmm. go to Solvang all the time for wine tasting and stuff like that. There used to be a room called, a place called Wandering Dog.
Okay.
And every time I would see the sign and walk past it, I would get Wandering Star by Portishead stuck in my head. But it happened, it was for so long that now the place isn't even there anymore, but just walking past that place gets that song stuck in my head. So at least 4 or 5 times a year, I walk around singing Wandering Star to myself.
That's funny.
Great song, though. But no, I wasn't listening to Portishead on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds today. Today, I was listening to the new album by a metal band called Tomb Mold. The new album is called The Enduring Spirit, and it's great. This is the second great album from Tomb Mold in a row. I don't love saying their name out loud, because I think the fact that it looks good on paper, Tomb Mold.
Yeah.
But the fact that the M sound, yeah. you have to stop.
Yeah, it's Tomb Mold.
Tomb Mold. No one's going to know what you're saying if you say Tomb Mold. Tomb Mold. Anyway, but great album, sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. They're available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com, but if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Tyler, we're back.
Yes.
Let's get into it, shall we? You Indeed. Wanted to talk about this.
Yeah.
Lay it out for us.
All right. So, this is going to sound like I'm talking about, you know, the world of con men or something. But boy, I really wish I was still in the game. And I know that I am
yeah,
a little bit, but not the way I would like to be, you know.
Okay.
Like tomorrow there is Alpha Omega Con, which is like one of my favorite things to do. I would go there and do lectures and stuff. And I didn't go to International Christian Film Festival.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing the podcast and all that. And going to screenings, I just don't get to do a lot of the stuff that I usually like to do. But I do try to keep tabs on film Twitter and just kind of larger conversations that are happening. And sometimes it means like I become maybe a little bit too obsessed with user comments on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I want to have my finger on the pulse. And, you know, to rewind a little bit, there are certain terms culturally and then in film that are used so often that certainly I think they've lost their original meaning. One of those terms when talking about art is pretentious. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, that was pretentious. What they usually mean is that was weird. Okay. And usually that was weird to the point that I don't understand it, and I don't like not understanding things. So I'm going to label it pretentious and move on.
Yeah, that movie thinks it's better than me. The movie thinks it's smarter
exactly,
than me.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. It's very, you know, it's very Boston. You think they're better than me?
It reminds me of a very old Paul F. Tompkins bit about jazz and what's the matter, dummy? You don't like our smart people music?
Maybe you're too dumb, dummy. And then, like, in the larger world, I feel like at this point, the word fascist has lost most of its meaning. I think people throw that out there a lot for almost anything that that they don't like.
I don't necessarily agree. I think the word is used a lot because the tenets have reemerged in a lot of ways.
I suppose.
I understand. I think that maybe was true at a time. Just like it was like for so long, it was lazy to compare any like political figure you didn't like to Adolf Hitler.
Sure.
And then we had Donald Trump and like Stephen Miller and people who were actually like Hitler-ish,
yeah,
or Nazi-ish, and it was hard to make that stick. Maybe because so maybe that's the idea is that anyone has like been called fascist, but you've got I think the you know Donald Trump and the people like him who were you know Donald Trump's famous like 2016 campaign promise that only I can fix the, like that's fascist. I think the Blue Lives Matter movement is fascist.
I'm not the first person to say this. I always thought Trump was more of a Mussolini. But also fascist.
Yeah, both fascist. Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those things that when I see it used,
yeah,
people are like, oh, they're putting like corporations in charge. That's fascist. Right. And then other people say like, oh, but it's the government's going to control everything. That's fascist. And it's like, well, what the fuck, man? Which one do you want? Like, can it be both, I guess?
Let me talk about the Blue Lives Matter thing, because I want to get this off my chest, because it really bothers me.
You hate cops, I got it.
Well, yeah.
I said the same thing to get out of jury duty, and it worked like a charm. And
that was didn't before, lie.
That was before it was cool.
Yeah, you hated cops before it was cool, that's true. No, the Blue Lives Matter thing, here's the problem. Okay, this is a whole other part of it, is I consider myself a patriot, but I also, things have gotten, the word patriot has been so co-opted by the fascist people on the right, I think, that I almost feel like I have to apologize for even referring to myself as a patriot.
Right.
But that's not even the issue. The issue is, I consider myself a patriot. I don't love seeing the American flag desecrated.
Sure.
But I also, like, to me, someone burning an American flag, which I don't love, is preferable to the Blue Lives Matter sign, because the flag burning, they know what they're doing.
Right.
The Blue Lives Matter sign is a desecration of the American flag, except those people don't think it is, because they think it is their flag to do with as they please. Right. And that is what's fascist about, and that's what makes me, my blood boils every time I see one of those Blue Lives Matter stickers.
And when somebody like, I don't know, I mean, again, it's the flag, you can do what you want with it, but at the same time, like, whenever someone turns it into, like, a jacket, I'm just like, all right.
I know, I've complained about that, too, but I am a hypocrite because I do have a pair of socks that has American flags on it.
Well, now you're basically, like, stomping on the flag all day.
It's...
And that's the other thing, is being conservative as I am, like, in theory, we should be tremendously anti-fascist because we do not believe that the executive branch, like one guy, should have too much power. That's the theory.
But there are fewer and fewer people who call themselves Republicans who feel that
way. Right. And I think just increasingly, I think everybody has just put so much stock in the president that that becomes like the only race that matters.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, no, it's all about the Congress. But I'm quickly becoming the minority just in general. Because, and I get it. Like, with the Congress, like, shit, man, there's 100 over here. There's 435, 437.
I think 435.
435. I don't know why I thought it was 7. But anyway, but that's a lot of races to keep track of.
Yeah.
As opposed to just one race, which is the presidential race. So I get why that's the one that everyone puts stock in. And as a result, I feel like that just puts all of us in mind that, like, the president is, like, the one that does everything. I got us really sidetracked with the fascism.
Yeah, you
thing.
Still haven't even mentioned the word that the episode
right.
is about.
Well, I wanted to mention those two words because we're going to be talking about something kind of in between, and that is the word propaganda. A word that I read all the time when it comes to movies. And I started getting really tired of it because, as far as I can tell, the way people use it is a movie with a message you don't like. And it's like, oh, that's just propaganda. And obviously, the way a movie is made can sort of feed into that, which I get, but it got me thinking about, like, well, what is propaganda, you know? And so I thought it's something that we could discuss here on the show, give some examples of movies that we think might be movies that we know are actual propaganda, and then movies that we feel like, I understand why people would think this, but it doesn't really qualify. And that sort of thing. Now, back at school, you took a war propaganda class.
Cinema, war propaganda films.
Yeah.
So that's, like, the tension of this episode is going to be between the way that you're talking about the word being used, which is generally incorrect, and the actual definition of the word. Because I remember when we were talking about this idea a week or two ago, and you were talking about people calling Barbie propaganda.
Right.
And my first thought was, like, propaganda on whose behalf? Mattel's? Because to me, it's not propaganda unless someone is backing it. Like, saying, you know, the examples being, there's the Why We Fight and all of those, like, great short films, short documentaries that were made by notable filmmakers like John Huston and Frank Capra and all these people during World War II. Those are propaganda because those they were not enlisted. That's probably the wrong word to use in talking about the military. They were recruited, also the wrong word, by the military to make these movies. That's propaganda. So to me, if you're saying Barbie is propaganda for Mattel, I think that's a fair but if you're just saying
that's not usually that, how people use it though.
If you're just saying Greta Gerwig made this movie to make feminist talking points and arguments, I think that's very superficial, very facetious reading, but like, that's didacticism maybe.
Yeah.
It's not propaganda.
Right.
Like, Greta Gerwig is not an official representative of big feminism, you know? It's just a filmmaker's point of view and argument.
Yeah. I do love the idea of like, every single thing has some kind of big this. I saw people calling Barbie propaganda. I saw people calling Sound of Freedom propaganda. And then Nefarious, that movie that you know I do not like, they said, like, oh, this is just Christian propaganda. And I was just like, look, I don't like the movie. In fact, I mostly hate it. But at the same time, it's a point of view. You know, and like having a point of view is not wrong. And even if you make artistic choices to like bolster that point of view, I don't think that counts as propaganda. But I guess the question is, can it? Because I remember for a long time, I myself said that about like the films of Michael Moore, because in that instance, he would seem to be dealing in fact, but in fact, he's constructing stuff to bolster his point of view. But even now, I don't know if I consider that propaganda. Start to get a little muddy.
I hadn't thought about Sound of Freedom. Because let's go back to that.
And I haven't seen that one, so I don't know.
Neither have I. But so this isn't. But that actually will come up in a second.
Okay.
Isn't that movie funded by people who like fight sex trafficking or that like? What I'm saying is,
I believe it's like almost completely like crowdfunded, like that. It's from Angel Studios, and that's mostly what they do.
But let's say for example, let's say it was a movie that was founded by an organization that does this. That would make it propaganda, but also, again, getting back to the conflict between these two different definitions.
Yeah,
the way I use propaganda is just a fact. It's not a value judgment. A movie can be propaganda and be good, like those Why We Fight movies. Those are good.
Well, that's the thing that. Oh, sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
I think I made my point that like the way the other people are saying it are saying propaganda as if that is immediately understood to be a pejorative.
To
be a critique of the film, like, as if a good film can't be propaganda.
Yeah, and I think that people view it as like, oh, well, if it's propaganda, it's less pure. You know, meanwhile, you look at the films of Eisenstein and he's like doing such astonishing things. And in a way, his movies being propaganda were quite liberating for him, because all he had to do was like, all right, yeah, I'll make the Soviet Union look okay. And then I can do whatever I want, right? Great.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's where things like get complicated. And I agree with you. It like people act like, oh, well, if it's propaganda, then it has no bearing. It has no weight. It has nothing to add to the artistic conversation. So the conversation we're having is like, what counts as propaganda? And even if it does, what about it? You know?
Yeah. I'm going to be speculating here because I don't know entirely what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But hey, I'm a podcaster. I'm a white male podcaster. That's literally our bread and butter.
Damn right.
Because you're talking about, obviously, coming from the right, you're seeing criticisms of movies like Barbie coming from the right. I'll go the other way and say there was a lot of left-wing criticism of Top Gun Maverick for being military propaganda.
Oh, okay.
But I think this is where the line gets blurred, because I don't think, you know, Tom Cruise and Paramount and everything made Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah.
But do you have to, like, if you're going to use fighter jets?
Yeah.
Do you think that the military or the Air Force has to like sign off on some part of that? And does that, even if they're not funding it, does their approval make the movie more propagandistic?
That's a good question, because, you know, they're not the ones funding it. The idea did not originate with the military. And so, like, in this hypothetical, which I feel like, they had to have signed off on it, right? I mean, studios have a lot of money, but they don't have a lot of jets just sitting around.
$35 billion
exactly.
Jets. Yeah. Did you hear about that jet that went missing?
No.
They found its remains. I don't know if that's the right word. They found its wreckage, I guess is the right word.
Okay.
Basically, an Air Force pilot on like a training mission or something accidentally ejected.
Oh my.
And the plane just kept flying, and it was like a plane that is designed to evade radar. They literally didn't know where the plane was until they found the wreckage. Luckily it didn't like crash into a person or a house or a stadium.
Are you sure Are you sure you're not thinking of the sequel to Doctor Strangelove?
Yeah.
Because everything about that seems like a satire.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. But yeah, and so, oh, I didn't know that about Top Gun Maverick. That's interesting. And so, and yeah, and I saw, like, people, I wouldn't say people on the left, although I guess there's that too. When they talk about Nefarious, they say, like, oh, this is just an excuse for Christian or right-wing talking points. And my first thought was like, well, that might be true, but, you know, the Republican Party did not fund the movie. And so then the question becomes, you know, if it's Christian propaganda, well, there is no official Christian organization that, like, unifies everybody, but it is a thing. It is, like, a larger body of people that believe a certain thing. And so is there, for example, such a thing as Christian propaganda? You know, if there's a, you know, if there's a movie funded by the Catholic Church, obviously, but I mean in the larger sense, is there such a thing as Christian propaganda, left-wing propaganda, right-wing propaganda? If it's not, like, if it didn't originate with an official group.
Yeah, is I mean, it? That to me, that's the dividing line. Is okay. Like, there's definitely such a thing as left-wing propaganda. You mentioned Sergei Eisenstein.
Sure. Yeah.
I also recently watched for the first time. This is another. I'm not sure. I watched for the first time 1972 Chilean documentary called The First Year.
Okay.
By Patricio Guzman, who was like following the first year of Salvador Allende's presidency.
Yeah.
And he was very pro Allende. And was given a lot of access. Yeah. I don't know where the funding came from, yeah, or anything, but, like, I mean, that
feels... Well, access could be the funding in a way,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. One could lead to the other. But again, like, this is what I'm talking about, that, like, just because a movie is propaganda doesn't mean it's bad.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, but then is there a point where a movie is... The point that it's making, the arguments that it's making, are so wrong,
right,
that, I mean, I guess this is like the birth of a nation question.
Yeah.
Like, people used to, luckily I was not, I don't think you were either, I was not taught birth of a nation in film school.
I saw clips of it.
Weirdly, I saw clips of it in my high school. I had a history elective on the Civil War.
Oh, interesting.
And so the teacher showed clips of it in that context,
yeah,
which I think makes sense. Like,
sure,
really,
yeah.
Like,
in my history of cinema class at Columbia, I saw a clip from it, and with some heavy caveats from the teacher.
But I guess for a long time, the argument was that, like, no matter what Birth of a Nation is saying, the steps forward in filmmaking technique used by D.W. Griffith make the movie worth teaching. And I, yeah, think there's been a lot of pushback on that. Yeah. I think that's drawn back a lot because it's like you can't separate the two. And I guess the other, yeah, question, in that war propaganda class, I watched Triumph of the Will.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like a similar thing where it's like Leni Riefenstahl was a great documentarian.
Yeah.
And there's like some really stirring stuff in there.
A little too much.
Yeah, but like, you can't say, I can't see myself saying, like, I'm not going to put Triumph of the Will on a best movies of all time,
right,
list. Which this side, but this has nothing to do with our conversation. A listener was recently, we were talking in the comments on some episode about the idea that, like, when the AV Club did their list of the best TV series of the 2010s,
yeah,
like the 100 best, they didn't include Louis, which, like, feels like,
yeah,
like at the time there would have been no question.
Absolutely. But the list been was written high. After,
it yeah,
would have been high on the list.
And I, like, I think I understand the decision to leave it off.
Yeah.
It's weird to not even mention it at all, I guess.
Right.
But so by the same, like, there is no amount of good filmmaking in Birth of a Nation or Triumph of the Will that's gonna land it on my best movies of all times list.
I didn't
watch all of Olympiad in that class. I saw clips of Olympiad.
Oh, okay.
And that's one that's like, it is it's propaganda. It was paid for by the Nazi Party to make Germany look great,
but
it doesn't have any of their, you know, that part of their platform. Yeah. You know, maybe
it doesn't have any of their hallmarks.
Yeah, so maybe Olympiad would be a better movie than Triumph of the Will because of that. I don't know. I haven't seen all of Olympiad.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's the thing is this is probably why people so often say that propaganda should not be taken seriously, or that it makes it worse, that the word is pejorative, is because something like Birth of a Nation or Triumph of the Will, where it's like you said, what it's doing and how it's doing it are so intertwined that, like, well, in this case, like with propaganda, the movie is the message. You know what I mean? And so if the message is just so inherently wrong or propped up by an official organization of some kind, then it's like, well, anything, any attempt to convey it in a an effective way is just, that too is a function of the propaganda machine. And so, yeah, it's and yet neither of us would bat an eye. Nobody would bat an eye on talking about Potemkin, like, at all. And, like, I remember I was watching it. I mean, I showed it to my world history classes and my cinema history classes. And I watched it for the first time in several years. And there's a scene where, like, you know, there's a mob, you know, talking about the revolution. And then one guy goes, like, and down with Jews, you know? And everyone gets mad at him, like, hey, that's not what we're about.
Yeah.
And that scene is pure propaganda because that's supposed to talk about, like, hey, the Russian Revolution, it was never anti-Semitic. Meanwhile, Joseph Stalin was maybe the most anti-Semitic, I'll say the second most anti-Semitic world leader. Yeah. And so, like, so that choice is, I mean, that is a scene that only or a moment that only exists because the state needed it to or wanted it to. And so moments like that make me feel a little bit gross, you know?
Yeah.
Even though I love the movie.
Couple things. One, I always said that when I got older, I was not going to be one of those old people who talks about kids these days.
But okay.
It's inevitable. It happens. I'm 41 now.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Happy birthday.
Thank you. And I do find it troubling how many people seem to not be able to separate the quality of a work of art from whether or not they agree with it. You know, it seems so, such a cheap and superficial way to interact with art. But here's another question I have.
I'd say it's increasingly, and I don't even think it's a generational thing. I think it just has to do with the culture right now that, like, if you disagree something with something, nothing else about it matters. Mm. So I don't even think it's generational. But I feel like you're actually more tapped in to the younger generation than I am. So maybe it is. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think everyone's, I don't know.
Everyone's pretty terrible. Got it.
The other thing I was going to say, we were talking about Birth of a Nation. It reminded me that, I'm forgetting who was president at the time.
Birth of a Nation? That'd be Wilson. Yeah. He's Woodrow the one Wilson, like, he said it's like writing history with lightning.
Yes. So he endorsed it. You think about something like The Passion of the Christ and then going, like, to churches to show a movie. Like, does a movie like that become, like, after the fact, like, propaganda because of the way people are ginning up a group with a specific political or cultural aim?
Well, when you think about something like Black Klansman and the fact that, like, Birth of a Nation was not meant as propaganda. It was an adaptation of a novel that had a very specific point of view, wrong though it was, and so that's what he's trying to do. But at the time, it actually inspired a lot of people to join the Klan. And like when you see something like Black Klansmen, you see that like these Klan members are using it to inspire themselves, mm-hmm. which in general, it's like, wow. Like, how many modern people would be like, hey, let's all get together and watch a silent film. And like, yeah. No, we're not movie buffs, but we're so on board with the wrongness of this movie yeah. that we're willing to deal with something we never would. You know, they're not getting together to watch, The Last Laugh or Sunrise.
I'm glad you mentioned Black Klansman, because I think that goes back to the point we started with, because remember how that movie ends, drawing a direct comparison to
yeah.
the present, what then present day, and the yeah. aftermath of George Floyd's murder and the white supremacist march in Charlottesville,
right.
like making that direct connection. That's the kind of thing that I think the people you're talking about would incorrectly call propaganda,
right.
when it's really just Spike Lee,
yeah,
using his voice.
Yeah, and there's like, I mean, going back to something like The Crucible, like using the past to comment on the present is not a new thing,
right,
but
right.
I that's the thing is like, I've noticed that so many people, at least on the right, so many people will say like, oh man, like I just like people just want to see movies for entertainment. So like, you know, the left like injecting their views into this, like nobody wants that. It's like, well, okay, first off, I guarantee you that The Passion of the Christ is not traditionally entertaining in the normal sense of the word. Probably not Sound of Freedom either. I haven't seen it, but we're dealing with sex trafficking of children. Right. That is not by and large an entertaining idea. But they're okay with it because, like, in their mind, like, oh, there's nothing wrong with this because we're just talking about the truth. And so, like, their willingness to reduce what movies and what art should be when they come up against somebody with a point of view or a message that they don't agree with. Like, I think some people might say that anything that has some kind of message could be considered propaganda. Obviously, we don't agree with that.
Right.
But I feel like increasingly, that's kind of how it is. People, normies, as I call them, just want they just want entertainment until it comes time for their views to be reflected, and then they're fine with it.
I feel like it's not so much that they want to see their views reflected. And I think this is true of a lot of people, as much as they don't want to see viewpoints they don't agree with.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Reflected. I'm trying to remember. I can't remember where this criticism came from. But like, so maybe I'm making a straw man, but I swear I saw something like this. Like sitcoms. Well, I think the example that was used was Community, which I can't really comment on because I have seen maybe two or three episodes of Community.
I've seen the whole show a couple times.
But I can also think of, like, what's Britt? Is that her name? Britta?
Britta, yeah.
Okay. So I guess my understanding is that she's, like, a sort of liberal character.
Yeah, she's a liberal atheist. But, like, in, you know, a very posturing kind of way.
So that's, if you look at shows like Superstore, which I did watch,
yeah.
The main character of there, whose name I'm forgetting, from Mad Men, Ginsburg from Mad Men.
Ben Feldman?
Ben, yeah. His character is very much like the show's always making fun of him for, like, you know, believing everything he hears on NPR and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
You watch Abbott Elementary. It has the one white male teacher.
It's just trying so hard.
There's Diane on BoJack yeah. Horseman. Like, the argument someone was making was that, like, a lot of shows that, TV shows that would be thought of by the right as leftist yeah. propaganda do actually spend a lot of time making fun of the left, too, but that's not enough.
Right, because that's the thing. It's like in Community, there is a character named Shirley who is like a devout Christian, and there will be entire episodes devoted to like the way that she's implementing her faith, and now it's kind of judgmental and stuff like that. And I'm sure a lot of people will be like, oh, this show is anti-Christian. Oh, this show is anti-Christian. But yeah, like, it makes fun of Britta just as much. And I'd say there might even be, like, entire episodes, or at least entire plot lines devoted to her trying to be this thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, there's this scene where there's this plot line of one episode where she's like good friends with a lesbian.
Uh-huh.
And she really likes to make people know it. Comes out that the other girl is not a lesbian, but thinks Britta is. And so, like, they're trying really hard to, like, show how progressive they are, so yeah. Much so that they realize, like, oh, shoot, we've just made major assumptions about people, which is probably the exact opposite of what we're supposed to do. But yes, I agree.
Do you remember when Elaine was dating a guy she thought was black, and he was dating her because he thought she was Latina?
Yeah,
and at the end, they're like... Yeah, because his name is Benes. Like, and they're like, so we're just a couple of white people?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't know. I guess it's kind of like having blinders on. That, like, if this is critical of me, that's all I'm going to see. Like, it should not be critical of me. Everyone else, sure. But the moment it comes, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, not in my backyard, as Jimmy Pardo would say. Yeah, and so anytime that happens, I'm sure people are just like, well, this is just propaganda against my side or whatever.
Someone knocked on your door. Do we need to wrap this up?
It's my brother. It's fine.
Oh, we should probably wrap this up pretty soon, though. I wanted to talk about other stuff that I saw in that propaganda class.
Okay.
Other stuff we talked about. Because, yeah, we watched Why We Fight. And we watched, like I said, Triumph of the Will.
Now, did you guys watch Animal Farm?
No, not in that. Who made the animated one?
Yeah.
Because I've seen the
from the 50s?
Yeah.
Well, you know, at the time, it was just a movie that was released. It was an adaptation of George Orwell's novel. And only decades later did it come out that the CIA funded it.
Oh, wow.
And so it's like, and on one hand, it's like, well, this was a popular novel. But then it's like, okay, an anti-communism thing seemingly for children. Coming out in the 50s, like, yeah, that tracks. Yeah. I don't know how we all didn't assume it in the first place.
Did you ever see, I know you've seen Los Angeles Plays Itself. It's great. Before that, Tom Anderson made a documentary called Red Hollywood.
Which I haven't seen, but I've heard great things
about.
It's
awesome. But, I mean, it was definitely a movie that would be considered by these people leftist propaganda, where it's just him making a point. But his point was that, like, the people who were blacklisted, a lot of the people who were blacklisted were in fact communists, were in fact putting their communist ideals into their screenplays, and here are some examples, and aren't they all great?
Yeah, well, and also just, you know, for me, like, I don't agree with communism at all, but it's fucking America, do what you want.
Yeah, you know, you can do that.
Put it in your movies, I don't care.
We also watched in that class, we watched some real racist stuff, not Birth of a Nation.
Okay.
But we watched, like, the Warner Brothers cartoons, like, with Bugs, like, going
fighting
undercover
Mike.
With the... Well, it's called, like... Okay. The one-syllable version of the word Japanese, you don't say that. That's
got
a slur. Which I think confuses a lot of people, because, like, a Jewish person is a Jew. That's not a slur. Not a slur to say Jew, but a Japanese person, you don't say that.
Well, and if
but
you...
it's in
if
the
you,
title. What's that?
If you shorten Hebrew, like, that's
right,
one
that's
I've heard
bad.
Before.
Yeah. But anyway, that word is in the title of this Bugs Bunny short, which was on the Laserdisc collection with, like, an intro... It was, like, Whoopi Goldberg or someone,
maybe,
did an intro, like, giving context to this.
Yeah.
And that's what we watched. It's from the Laserdisc. So that was crazy. We also watched... Disney made shorts, animated shorts. I'm sure there were some using their characters, but one they saw was, so this was post-World War II. This is in the Cold War period.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time actually talking about the Good Neighbor Policy, which was America basically, the U.S. basically trying to sidle up, get close to Latin America to try and keep communism from taking root there. And a lot of that stuff got real patronizing real quick.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so there was like this Disney, this short that Disney made a bit like basically like they sent it to Latin American countries. It was in Spanish. And they also sent it to Brazil because like, apparently no one thought that like, oh yeah, they don't speak Spanish in Brazil. Anyway, that was like literally teaching them how to be cleaner. It is so condescending and patronizing.
Well, and also, I mean, there were features. There was the Three Caballeros in the 1940s,
right.
Which was admittedly like just a collection of like short things. And I feel like there was another one with a Spanish title, and I don't remember. But yeah, those were made pretty much like they're good in and of themselves. But it was very clear in retrospect, like oh, it was part of the Good Neighbor Policy.
The other movies that we watched in that class that really stick out to me, going back to World War II, there were two different movies that had two very different messages that were clearly meant for American women during World War II on the home front. So we watched Press and Surge's The Miracle of Morgan's Creek, which is a movie that, like, knowing what the code was, the Hays Code was, watching it now in a vacuum, you go, how the hell did this movie get past the Hays Code?
Right.
The whole premise of the movie is that the night before a bunch of soldiers are about to ship off, one woman has sex with five different soldiers, gets pregnant, and doesn't know which one the father is. This is a 1944 movie.
That's crazy.
But our teacher, Ron Falzone, contextualizes it as saying, like, there was a concerted effort to, as a way to encourage men to join, young men to join the military, to subtly suggest to young women, like, hey, maybe you could be a little, we can loosen up some of those morals a little bit for our fighting boys. And then the other one we watched, so there were, I was always familiar with Blondie as a comic strip, you know, Dagwood and stuff like that. But there were also a series of Blondie films. And the one we watched was Blondie for Victory, which is a movie in which Blondie becomes so dedicated to, like, raising money for the war effort and war bonds and stuff that she neglects her duties as a homemaker, wife, and mother. And so the part of the point of the movie is, like, don't, you know, do your part on the home front by keeping your home nice and making sure that your family is
About missed messages where it's like we want everyone to buy war bonds and we need people to sell them but not you
or just not so much,
not half the population,
that there's not dinner on the table at 6 p.m. or whatever. So those, I just wanted to talk about movies we watched in that class, and those were some that stuck out to me.
Well, and I did want to mention something you were talking about, which was like when groups will use a film or a work of art that is not propaganda at all, and they will use it for their purposes, and in doing so they kind of maybe taint that film or a work of art a little bit. Like, it's, you hear it all the time that like a political candidate will use like a song, and the artist's like, this is not what I intended for this. And it's tough because on one hand it's like, but you put the song out and people can take inspiration for it if they want.
They're also allowed to speak up and say,
exactly. But then I also think,
you hear Eminem has asked Vivek Ramaswamy to stop playing Lose Yourself. Not asked. Eminem's not the most polite fellow.
He's like, hey, I'm sorry to bother you, but then I think of a movie like M, where they started using images of Peter Lorre in Germany as like, this is your typical Jew, you know, like sneaky and swarthy and that sort of thing. And you started to see like Peter Lorre's photos from that movie show up on like posters and stuff. And so when I think about that, I think of like, oh man, why do you gotta go and ruin a great movie? And of course they didn't ruin the movie, but I'm sure for some people they can't think of M, you know, maybe people of a certain age, they can't think of M without associating it with how someone used it.
Yeah. When Natalie and I were in Berlin, we toured Sachsenhausen, the concentration camp. And you're allowed to take pictures at Sachsenhausen, except for there was one of the barracks a long time ago was vandalized and burned by neo-Nazis.
Yeah.
They reconstructed the barracks and then turned that barrack into a museum.
Okay.
And that museum has a ton of anti-Jewish propaganda from the time.
Sure.
It's the one place at Sachsenhausen you were not allowed to take pictures.
Oh.
Because they're like, here it's contextualized and people understand.
Right.
If you take a picture of this and share it on Instagram,
yeah,
out of context, it could be...
Yeah.
So it's the only place you're not allowed to take pictures at Sachsenhausen.
And when you think about it, like, you know, the internet has turned all kinds of stuff into propaganda. Pepe the Frog, for example,
was never
meant to be that. And then suddenly he's considered like a hate symbol. And there's a documentary about the artist.
Yeah, it's called Feels Good Man.
Yeah, and I haven't watched it, but I think about it. I'm sure it is, because, like, apparently the guy's just, like, really soft-spoken and nice, and it's like...
And also just, like, so not... Like, not that I'm, like, super online, but he's, like, so not versed in the internet that you just feel, like, bad for him. Like,
such a shame.
He's, like, he wants to undo this thing, and it's, like, there's and, no...
Yeah, he can't no ring a bell.
Yeah. And then there's also, you know, the Gadsden flag, the Don't Tread on Me flag, which has been used so much by, like, white supremacist organizations.
I know.
That the fact that it, like, flies officially places, people have said, like... Should we take that down?
And it's tough because that one's like, I mean, yeah, it's a great example where, like, this was never meant to be that.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, it isn't that. For most people, I'd say. But the idea that someone wants to, like, appropriate it and use it solely for their purposes, it's just like, oh, they're taking it away mm-hmm. from people that are, like, actual patriots and, you know, are proud of, like, Or knowledgeable about, like, the American Revolution, and somebody says, like, no, that's ours now. And in a way, like, I feel that way about the Babadook, where, like, like, it was a horror movie that has nothing to do with, like, gay rights or anything like that. But because it was miscategorized on Netflix, it became this icon. And it's like, you know,
is that where that started?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It literally was put in the wrong category.
But I mean, I think.
But do what you want.
But also,
I'm not against it.
There's a tongue in cheek.
Absolutely.
But then again, not everyone gets that. Like, I still, to this day, every time I see a Ron DeSantis or someone use the word woke, like, as a serious thing, I still have to roll my eyes because it's like, this was like the word.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a real word. It was, like, made up as a kind of, like, tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, yeah.
Like, catch-all.
Tongue-in-cheek does not exist anymore, I think. it's safe to say. But, yeah, so to kind of wrap up, because we should end. You know, so the title of this episode is What is Propaganda? And I think we...
Okay.
Oh, that's how I pitched it. Sorry.
Okay.
And so, you know, our answer... essentially comes down to where did it start, but also the idea that even if something is propaganda, doesn't mean there isn't all kinds of really substantial and influential and effective artistic choices being made, you know.
And also, just because you disagree with a movie doesn't mean it's a bad movie.
Exactly
Up to a point, obviously, and that's, you know, we can quibble over the line there.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's fairly subjective. But yeah, I just got so tired of seeing people say that about just a movie they don't agree with.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's going to happen. Sorry.
All right. Well, we define propaganda.
Absolutely.
Oof. Well done, us. You can find me at battleshipretention.com. Email me at David at battleshipretention.com. Follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Davey Pretension. And check out my other podcast, The One Where I Met Your Mother. This show is propaganda for The One Where I Met Your Mother.
That's right.
A podcast about Friends and How I Met Your Mother that I do with my wife.
Yeah, we got Natalie, some of that. We got some of that sweet The One Where I Met Your Mother, right?
Wait. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we got some of that sweet One Where I Met Your Mother money.
Yeah.
And we're just coasting.
Yeah. Tyler, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Tyler Pretension. I don't use that one very much, but I do use at More Lessons on Twitter. And
When Tyler's in a bad mood.
Find out when Tyler's in the dumps. And then also find out when I randomly say, like, hey, what's everyone's favorite sci-fi movie or whatever. it's a good way to engage with me if you want to, like, check in with how I'm doing or direct message me. It's always nice to get messages from people, and Twitter is a really good way to do that.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.